It's the Nyaupe guys. It's the guys smoking Nyaupe.
What?
So
I won't lie to you. That's a first.
For you, even for 18 him. Years, that's a first.
18 years.
I won't lie to you.
Serious.
Like I've. Like,
I don't tell. These were the words you used.
Sorry, but
no.
Whoa.
So that you can see that this was what he told me. The words he used is this. Yeah, it's a kaulwana. You see.
Bro,
is that
this is out of this world, bro. I won't lie to you, bro.
Is that, so my
in my 18-year experience
maybe
with
it's
the
just
streets,
a physical thing then.
Or maybe it's not actually. He was loafing around.
But he was, I mean, listen, it was a serious discussion. We weren't laughing or anything, yeah.
But remember, there's now this new trend called...
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Let's Talk Man with the Gents Clinic. Six South African male medical doctors on a mission to change the way in which we perceive healthcare. Today we have a guest that needs no introduction. It's a man you've seen all over social media. He's been impersonated from everyone, including the late AKA. We have here in the studio our very esteemed guest, Bonga Sithole. Now, Bonga, I don't know how else to introduce you other than the guy that needs no introduction.
Okay.
But let's maybe start with...
Let him introduce himself.
Yeah, let's start with how would you introduce yourself, Bonga?
Okay. Sanbonani. Ngubonga, B-O-N-G-A. Sithole. Ujobe, umondise, umantshana, umsongo wensimbi. Igubase, umaphethe. So... So, ngusuthu lumabheshwa nkone. So, and again, thank you. And I feel privileged to be part of the show today. Yeah.
Thank you, Bonga. Thank you for making the time to be here. Yeah. I know you're a very busy man.
Okay.
And money is out there to be made.
Yeah.
So, let's not keep you, let's not keep you too long. I just want to know where you're from. Let's start there. Where are you from? Where were you born?
Okay. Mina, I'm from Ezola too, Soweto.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sansa's homeboy.
Oh, okay.
Who is that?
He's another doctor on the podcast.
Oh, okay. Uzola, Zola 7, Bonkos Dlamini, is maybe two blocks down my road. Yeah. So my mother is from Zola 2, but my pops was from Kotlhabane, go best there. Rustenburg in the Northwest province.
Okay.
Yeah, that's so correct.
Cool. So you grew up there, and then where did life take you?
Okay. My father, as I have said, he was a taxi owner.
Mm-hmm.
So he was unfortunately... he was gunned down. 9 bullets to the head, so he died. So...
taxi wars...
Not as such,
okay.
But rather, in this industry, it can get so brutal that your own family can be your greatest ops.
Okay.
Yeah, in a sense that there are rumors that there are some family members who were involved in the hiring of the hitman to take him out. Yes.
How old were you?
Let's say it's about 11 years ago now.
Okay.
11 years.
Yes.
You were an adult.
Fairly, we can say that, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, my moms and pops had split from a very tender age. You understand? So, my upbringing was always more, I get my mother's from Zola, so way to Tlhabane, Rustenburg. So it was more interperambulating from these two diverse vicinities.
Nice.
So that's how I believe I grew via the cerebral in terms of oral and linguistically. I just believe Jorge, embracing diverse native beings, that's how you grow as an individual.
So where did you get this, where did you develop this verbosity, this Shakespearean.
Okay.
Dialect.
okay.
Not even Buyiseni Ndlozi speaks like this.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not just the words, it's also the tone, the way you articulate.
Yeah, you're so like
accent. It sounds like you're a thespian, like you went to theater school.
That's very profound. Yeah. What I can say about you, because my highest academic was standard 7, which is what, grade 10.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's the
grade
highest. 7,
that's grade 9, I think.
Grade 9.
Grade 9, yeah.
Yeah,
standard 7 is my highest. But everything that I know of, or everything that I am, is self-taught. One, I've been somebody who've always embraced literature. I've read a lot.
Okay.
Yeah, and mostly I would read encyclopedias, like massive chunks of book. Remember, Jorge, I once stayed on the streets for almost 18 years. So remember, Jorge, there was a time when I was sleeping, you know, at the gate of UJ, at Campus Square.
Yes.
Yeah. So, between semesters, like my semestrical break, you know, these kids, like tertiary level academics I would ask like their books, you understand? So there was a time when I craved reading, you understand? Because, you know, actuarial sciences, you know, like your chartered accounting, law, you know, those type of stuff. So those were the things that were keeping me, you understand? So I also believe that God had blessed me with a rather broad cerebral. So you can check how large this head is. So the bigger brain cavity equals bigger gigabytes of data.
Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, it's. I believe it's a medley or a concussion of both. So
you had an interest in reading and knowledge and information.
Thank you.
And then you just kept feeding that.
Yes.
You never actually had any other formal education or anything. And when did you start living on the streets?
Okay, the streets. Okay.
And first, let's start with what led you to leave home and to...
Okay.
So I assume you started off life living in a home.
Yes, you're so correct. Yeah. Let me just put it so. Right. I get in my... Okay, my mother and father split. My mother had stepdad. So, okay. Well, I get it now, he was more heavy in liquor.
Alcohol, yeah.
Yeah. So he was rather verbally suppressing me emotionally. And some things I just cannot mention. Because right now we are in the process of reconciliation. So I don't want to rub it off as being him being a monster. You understand? Because I also believe, Jorge, people have mistakes. And as time progresses, maybe you regret... But at the time, he was rather mean.
It was tough for you at all.
Yeah, very, very, very. Especially when, you know, when you kind of not relate, especially where biology or DNA is concerned.
Like, especially being a step first sibling, a step father or something, is the highest predictor of abuse in the childhood.
Yeah, you understand. And many could relate. Who grew up in such a rather toxic environment.
So you say that drove you out of the house?
Not, but slowly.
Okay.
But progressively over time. Because I get you know, with time, it escalates. Yeah. You understand?
Yes.
And yeah.
So that's the thing I think a lot of people would like to know and understand, is that how does someone end up living on the street?
Yeah.
Because... almost, I wouldn't say everyone, but almost everyone starts off having a home.
Yes, you're so
even
correct.
If you start meeting guys on the streets, I often do, especially back home in the Eastern Cape, they'll tell you, no, I live here, home is here.
Yeah.
So how do you end up on the street? And then later I'm going to ask you, what keeps you in the street, even though there is a home?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So maybe
and
first...
And I think to keep it a little bit more broad, you can speak about your experience, but also obviously the people that you've interacted with.
Yes.
How did they end up in general?
Is there some sort of a common backstory that you find you relate to others that have been through maybe a similar struggle in their life that, ended up getting them to this point?
Okay. I'll tell you a story of two guys, and I believe theirs is slightly harsher. Clive, there's a guy called Clive Roy. He died, unfortunately.
Okay.
It's him and Kosinathi Majola. Those guys, Utlive's mother, ne, gave him up for
adoption.
Shelter.
Okay.
Ne? And then these shelters, especially township shelters, are lesser privileged, in so to speak. So what they do is that they'll keep you up until the adoption has been settled.
Okay.
But the problem is, if they don't find adoption to you, there's a certain, I think it's age 14, where they have to release you. So that's exactly what happened to Clive Roy and Kosinathi Majola. Clive's mother was a drunkard, and she was a prostitute. So during her prostitutive years, one thing led to another. She found herself pregnant, and she wasn't ready for a responsibility of a toddler or an infant.
Sure. I don't know if you want to call it a stigma or misunderstanding, misconception that
people
have. Yes,
you're so correct.
There are some people that choose to live in the street and have a good home.
Yes.
Do you find that?
You do, Val. You do. But mostly in that instance, it's substance abuse.
Okay.
Yeah, some people leave home due to substances, being addictive. Remember, we have heroin. Heroin, if you can research, I believe it's the most addictive substance globally, followed by your crystal methamphetamine.
And now Nyaope has heroin in it. It's a cheap form, right?
It's like a cheap synthetic
heroin.
Heroin. Because the basic, or rather the active ingredient, is diamorphine. Because even if you get arrested now, you'll be charged with diamorphine.
Okay.
Yeah, because remember there was a time when they couldn't, the law itself didn't know how to persecute people who are found in possession of such a substance. So then they changed the legislature and making diamorphine illegal, so that to pass it into law, so that it becomes what? Persecutable. For people to be found in possession of such a substance. Yeah.
So guys who are living on the street on their own choice with a good home, it's often substance abuse,
it's
that
often
you say. So they've
substance.
Been led astray and
there's
maybe problems. Now they're not wanted at home. They're
stealing. Yeah. And then some guys, it's engbaziyo futhi, it's stealing. Because I know of a guy who almost was killed by mob justicing.
In the communities,
it's brutal.
Yeah.
Soweto, don't find yourself a thief in some parts of Soweto, because they will boil you. They will boil you and put a necklace, a 2 cent, where they put a tire and burn you alive. Yeah. So there was a guy who actually escaped a mob with a tire around his neck. And then ever since he's terrified to go back to the southwestern town.
And how big do you think substance abuse is in South Africa? Is it
it's very sad.
Yeah.
It's deeply sad. That's why we have now shows like Sizokthola. Mm. You know Sizokthola by Xola Nkumalo?
Yes.
Whereby,
I've heard of the show, yeah?
Yeah. You know that they give out free samples to school kids these days. So at home, your kids aren't safe anymore. Because these people, you know that the drug industry has now evolved almost like the taxi industry. Even the snaymans, which is your merchants, are now murdering each other for the cash, which you can relate to maybe places like Westbury and Bosmont.
For sure, yeah.
You understand where our colored brothers and sisters are actually being subjected to these gang-related violences where
over drugs,
Fazdans. Yeah. And if you look at on a workclub type of tournament, it will seem as if it's a gang-related war. Gandhi, it actually stems deeper. It's actual substance induced war between two parties.
And there's some people who say that to make it less violent or to take it out of the gangs, we should legalize drugs. What do you think?
I don't think so, Papa. That's now signing the death reaper into South Africa. Yeah. I'm actually planning on actually doing like a documenting, because you see these two eyes of mine. I've seen a lot of things in my life. That is why I believe, that is why actually, I gotta learn now, I'm also a human being, guys. So, Nami, I learn as I grow along. You understand? So, it's the more I learn about myself as time progresses. Mm. Then I realized that I wasn't actually a victim to the substance. You understand? Mm. Because for you to eradicate a problem, you have to dig deeper to its root cause. You understand? Then I realized what I was actually suffering psychologically. This thing was just a coping mechanism to try and numb the void in which I was feeling. The inner man was actually, you understand? So yeah, the inner wounds.
Because you're looking for something. That thing you're looking
comfort.
For. Kind of comfort you get from drugs.
You understand? Yeah. And one thing that sticks out was, remember, Pelamos, when you are a street dweller, you suffer a lot of things. And one of the greatest things that you suffer is rejection.
Mm.
And
On a regular basis.
But on a regular?
Daily.
Daily.
Even when you ask for help at the robot, you are rejected.
Bro, some people go away, pathetic, useless piece of garbage. You know, I've heard people tell me that, you know, calling you hobo and para and... Those, you know, the one thing I've noticed is that things you speak vocally have a deeper ripple effect than actual physical abuse. Mm. Did you realize that? For instance, let's say you have a kid. Okay, you have a kid. You have a kid. Right. Let's say your kid stole something. Let's say you put money there and then maybe they stole it for seeds. Mm. Okay. Then, when I, as the father, wanting to discipline the child, let's say you want to maybe spank him, you know, like in the back. Realize this. It's not how you spank the child. It's what you say as delivering the punishment. Mm-hmm. There's two scenarios. Why did you do such? You understand? You've been naughty and you understand? That's parental. Scenario number two. You're worthless. You are stupid. You understand? When the child sits back now, and now like a broken record, recalling, you know, like a CD with a scratch.
Playing over and over.
It's not the pain of the cane in the buttocks that will be ringing out in the memory. It's your words. You understand? It's your words. Pathetic. Useless. Yeah, you're just like your mother. Useless, pathetic. You understand? To such a degree that the pain that was being inflicted, but whatever means you were punishing the child, is not even remembered.
Yeah.
But what you were uttering orally.
Yeah. I've seen kids who came to the clinic as parasuicides.
Mm-hmm.
So the child tried to kill himself. And then the father came with the child, and the father doesn't know why the child is here.
Yeah.
I'm asking him, like, I was talking to the kid and he's telling me, like, he tried to kill himself, he took his sister's pills, and he's like, and I'm asking why. He's like, no, because like he felt like he was scared to tell his father that he's failing in school, right? So his father, now he thinks he's here because his child has a sick stomach or something like this. And I told him, no, look, your son told me that he tried to kill himself. He just started shouting at him at the same time, right? Can't understand why. There's no physical abuse. It's just all verbal.
You understand?
That rejection you're talking about.
You understand? Mm. So that's what I, Ubong, had suffered throughout all these years. And you know why I'm mentioning this? Because you actually mentioned, Oti. You remember his question? He said, what took you to this cheese? Yeah. And what kept you?
Yes.
You understand? So touching base on the word, the question, what kept you? You understand? Mm. Because all these rejective things that I'm receiving, all this garbage, all these negative perceptions which the society seems to feed me, is now growing into a concussion or a medley or a cocktail, rather, of emotional boilings which turn into an acid, which now in turn is deteriorating my way of thinking. That is why, my brother, if you look at most people who smoke maybe inyope, how do they look like, as in physically?
Thin. No, they don't look good.
Like they don't wash?
Yes.
Do you realize what it's not actually the substance that is making them not wash? It is their self-esteem. Once the society continually feed you worthless, worthless, pathetic, you start feeling like what the society is feeding you.
And accepting it.
You start accepting it. And then you start enacting it. That's where you start, the self-neglect comes into play. Because now you don't feel worthy, or you don't feel like you belong. You feel like an outcast or the scum of the society, the doormat of the society or the masses.
That's actually very important that he makes this point, right? Mm-hmm. That you become what people, the people first.
Yeah.
Decide that you are this.
Yes.
And you become that. And yet, when we're seeing people at work and we're considering mental health illness,
yes,
we tick that they are dirty, they are not clean, wearing dirty clothes. And yet, that's not necessarily their direct doing.
Yeah, they've, so correct.
They've
yeah.
come to accept and believe and live out what everyone thinks they are.
You understand?
So yeah, that's actually a wake-up call, man. Yes.
But don't you think, I mean, while chatting to you, and I'm sure that there are other people that you've come across and encountered in your time who find the strength, the internal strength to reject the outer opinions of others.
Yes.
And find the strength to develop a self-esteem that's internal.
You're so correct.
And although that's extremely difficult, and I'm sure rare, what society generally tells you. I mean, so you have two ways of dealing with external criticism.
Yes.
Either you internalize it.
Yeah.
Or you take the criticism.
Yeah.
You reject it and say, I know that's not true.
Yes.
I know that I can.
Yeah.
Or you use that as fuel
yeah.
to prove people wrong.
Okay.
What do you think is more common?
Among people on the streets, yeah.
Okay. What I will tell you from my personal experiences is that in the end, we're all human. I get it. So gradually or progressively over time, our hearts were like sponges, you understand? They absorb these, you understand?
Yeah.
I'm speaking from my own personal experiences. In the 18 years, I was a homeless street dweller or street kid. It took me time, you understand? Because there was a time when I felt so pathetic or so useless, you understand, to an extent that I felt like life was not worth living anymore. There were days when I was like a zombie, so to speak, you understand, while standing maybe by the intersections and doing etc. You understand? So it's something that over time, you understand, you because I believe that life has a funny way of teaching you. Do you realize what the greatest of life's lessons are learned through hardship, or rather through struggles? Or you understand? So me personally, it took me time. You understand? Yeah, it took time to actually start, especially when I started blowing up on the socials.
Okay.
That's where now some people's perceptions started becoming different towards me. That's where now people saw a sense of potential in this individual whom was judged or labeled.
And did they? And did that boost your self-esteem then?
Not boost, but rather it broadened my perception towards life. Then I realized, ukuthi kahle kahle, it's not the world I need to change, it's myself. Then I realized, ukuthi kahle kahle, it's not about what the world gives you, it's how you take it. We understand.
Yeah.
So that to me was sort of a learning curve. You understand? Yes.
And before we chat about your social media journey, I think it's important for us to just sort of round off this topic on substance. So you mentioned that, you know, a lot of people on the streets and in your experience would use substances as a coping mechanism.
Yes, you're so correct.
And I think you did mention briefly that for you yourself, you did use substances
as
a coping mechanism.
Would
you feel comfortable talking about which substance?
Man, I'm always open because I believe, Jorge, this platform could be beneficial to somebody out there going through the same struggle. For instance, last year, October, there was a guy who approached me while I was standing by the intersections and begging. And when he saw me, he burst into tears. He said, "I cannot believe it. I finally met you, Bong." Then he was Shama Hazard, and then he parked his car on the other side, and then I ran. And then he just opened the car and just threw himself around me to give me a warm hug and a cuddle. And then he said, "Have you eaten?" And I was like, "I haven't had something edible for the day." So he said, "Let's go." And then we went to McDonald's, and then we sat. And his eyes were still bulging red, you understand? And then the guy says, "For some odd reason, Bonga, I owe my life to you." Then I told him, "No, you owe your life to God." No, he's like, "I'm serious." This guy told me of a story. This guy, actually, there was a time when his life was starting to decay or deteriorate, you understand? He had everything, a successful job. He had a house in Midland and a loving wife and two kids. Now, he started alcohol. And then as time progresses, his wife was starting being annoyed with his alcohol dieting. You understand? So his wife, okay, you know, most between relationships. You know, that type of vibes. Until it boiled to the point where she couldn't take it anymore. And then she started cheating on him. And he says when he found out that he was actually seeing another guy, that to him was worse than drinking poison. You understand?
Yeah. Yo.
It broke him to a point where he just...
That's understand? The worst thing a man can think of.
And then he just went 360 degree, boom. And then he went like heavily on alcohol to a point where he lost his job. He lost the house because it was, you know, almost bond mortgage payments and whatnot. And he actually at the brink of the landlord, because the landlord had been so patient with him, he gave him extra months to actually recuperate order to, you understand?
Yeah.
So the landlord had given him like a final declaration, or doesn't, on such and such a day, please leave. So this guy is sitting down with a bottle of whiskey. He says he had a gun in his hand. He said he couldn't take it anymore. And then he was, as he was drinking, trying to grow a plug to actually pull the trigger against his head. You understand? He says, for some odd reason, he started scrolling down his phone. And guess who popped up?
B-O-N-G-A.
Bong. You understand?
And what was Bonga saying?
And I wish you could
play. I'm the guy that was with your wife.
I wish. You know, I wish you could play that video.
Which video?
We'll find it. Which just video? Tell us.
We'll find it.
We'll put it up.
We'll put it up on the...
All right. On the... Okay.
Yeah.
In that video, I was sitting in a restaurant with Sisanda Qwabi. And Sisanda was like, okay, Vonga, so what are your views on life? She was just, you know, just... Yeah. Yeah. She was bored and wanted me to just speak something inspirational in some way or form. Then, if I remember correctly, I was speaking on life in general.
Mm.
That people think that the value of a man is defined by how much they've acquired materially. You understand? Because if you notice... The more people have, is the more they feel more a sense of superiority.
Mm.
That is why you find that when I'm standing by the intersection, as dirty as I am, then when you're passing maybe Mercedes or whatever privilege or luxury you are driving in, there's this sense of superiority, inferiority.
Ego.
Mm. Ego.
Yeah.
You understand? Yeah. And... that's what I've noticed. That's what contributed to my, you understand?
Yeah.
But anyway, then I said on the video is that I believe that it's not what you've acquired in the world that defines your value, but rather it's the size of your heart that counts most. It's how much love you possess. The bigger the love, the bigger or the wealthier you become. For instance, I said on that video that you can have everything in the world, but simple yet profound things like happiness, like joy, like peace. You understand? If you are deprived of that, then nothing you can acquire, even a 15 to 40 million in house, can never make you content. You understand? Yeah. It can never make you content. You understand? Because you have neglected the inner man. You have neglected your inner self. Mm. You understand?
And I have to back you on that, because we see sometimes guys who, you can say highly successful people.
Yeah.
They've achieved high levels in business and everything, and they're still on antidepressant medications.
Yeah.
They take medication to help them sleep at night.
Yeah.
They're constantly anxious.
Yeah.
So, then you're like, what's the point of all of this? You're still unhappy.
Yeah, you understand.
Happy with all the success and everything.
Yeah, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
I stressed on the importance of the word L-O-V-E, love.
Mm.
You know how profound love is?
Mm.
Love is, I believe that love is the answer to every social ill we're facing in the world right now. For instance, if a robber had love, abundant love, do you think he'd still pull out a knife and suppress his victim?
No.
No. If you loved that person as you loved yourself, you wouldn't subject him to robbery. Again, wars. If these two states which are disputing, if they had love for one another, do you think, for instance, who's this?
Wouldn't.
Who's this current
Trump?
Russia.
Oh,
Russia
Putin.
And
Putin.
If Putin loved unconditionally
Ukraine,
do you think he would subject it to such brutality? So I believe the world is what it is today because love is slowly diminishing in people's hearts. You understand?
Mm-hmm. No, it's true. So, people are lovers of themselves.
Thank you. So my closing. In that video, I said, I would rather live in a South Africa that is poor financially, but rich in love, than live in a South Africa that is rich materially, but very poor in love.
Mm.
You understand? And that guy said, for some odd reason, he couldn't pull the trigger. You understand? The gun was already on his head. So that is why I believe, Jorge, we must never underestimate the power of social media. You understand? For some instance or for some odd reason, what we are doing today is of a greater purpose.
Yeah.
You understand? which is to empower, to raise awareness, to, you understand?
Yeah. Just to finish off what you were saying, in my experience, I've actually found that people who grow up or live content with the life they have
are very joyous
and happy.
Very true.
And on the other aspect, you have what Dr. Nassim was explaining, that you can be how rich and successful, but might not have the joy at home.
I think ambition is a difficult thing. Some people find it easy to be ambitious and content at the same time.
Yeah.
So at every level of the journey, let's say you get a job, you want to get a better job, you want to get a better job. Mm-hmm. But at each level, you can be content or you can feel uncomfortable because I'm not where I need to be.
Yes. That
and it's something I think, even for us, we deal with often in our profession because we're always feeling like we need to progress. We need to get to the next level.
Higher and higher.
We need to provide more for our families. We need
you realize what the more you pursue such contentment is, the more it's like when you close here, another hole opens. It's as if now there's
more money, more problems.
You understand? It's like, it's because we are trying. Remember what this world is, a yin to the yang. For every negative, there's a positive. You understand? And for an equation to be balanced, a 1 + 1 this side has to be a 2 on this side. So my point being is that all I'm saying is that cater for both, not only for the physical needs and the pleasures, but also, which people neglect, is the needs of the inner man or the inner being. Yes.
And back on that yin and yang thing, so like I was talking to you earlier, and we're talking about how, like, you see creative people,
there's people
who have the resources, the businessmen.
Yes.
The businessmen will take over and abuse the guy, the creatives.
Yes.
And somehow it's like, it's just always like that the creatives always be like working for the businessmen who don't know anything about the creatives. And then I remember, because this is a very important thing, because you're someone who is so full of love and talent and creativity.
Yes.
Your voice is amazing. And so there's also a video I wanted to play. Can you play that video on the...
For instance, imagine a bank that caters for your every need.
Yeah.
We at Standard Bank believe you, the client, our family. Standard Bank is an authorized financial services and credit provider. T's and C's apply. That was my voice. Yeah. There was a guy, I'm mention up my name, by the way. That guy used me a lot. You remember, for me, as desperate as I was, for someone who's an executive at the SABC to pass down my intersection driving a Jeep SRT8 and then seize this young individual with such vibrancy. To suck dry whatever for their own selfish mandates.
Yeah.
So that's, in those words, what happened to me.
That actually,
I think it's very, very true.
About.
I mean, I didn't mention this to you before the podcast started, but other than being a doctor, I'm also a comedian.
Okay.
So I am a stand-up comedian, and I'm in the entertainment space, and I fully resonate with that.
Mm.
It's terrible how business people abuse creatives to make money because they realize that it's a need that everybody needs to laugh and everybody needs to be happy, to be entertained, to creatively advertise or market people's products. They use people like you and me and others, and it can be very, very tumultuous. I have a friend that literally this week committed suicide because of that. And I know how difficult the entire industry is
and can become.
Mm. And you, as somebody who's very creative and vibrant, will come up with amazing ideas and put a lot of your effort and joy goes into creating.
You are so correct.
And so when you don't get remunerated for that, you don't feel like there's value put
or like
to it.
Like
not appreciated.
Adequate compensation for your
I have a few questions, man. because I want to be educated and informed about street life.
Okay. But before we do, because I know that he has some interesting questions about street life and all of those types of things. Mm. You mentioned about this story, and you mentioned about thing, but I did want to know a little bit about your history with substance abuse and if you've managed to, you know, stop. Are you in the process? Like, what are you currently going through?
Okay, currently I'm on methadone. You know, methadone. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is to, yeah. It was almost like, I can't call it a substitute, but it helps a lot in, yeah.
And where do you get it? So just for anyone that has had a history with substance use wants to.
So currently, I get a, remember, Jorge, I'm currently unemployed. So I still hustle by the intersections, né? And then I'm staying in Soweto with my mother and two sibling sisters. You understand? So I buy my own methadone by the chemist.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ah, okay. So you get a prescription for it and you...
Yes. Because okay. I go with my mother. Then my mother becomes like a guardian.
Oh, and okay. And what made you take that step to say, I'm going to take the step, I'm going to clean myself up. I need, this is what I need.
It's because, remember, Jorge, as human beings, we all have dreams and ambitions.
Mm.
I can never say that me standing, like I was telling Usima when she was like, so what's up with the hustle? I'm like, sister, it is what it is.
Yeah.
But in the end, I am not defined
by
the circumstance. Mm. You understand? I believe that this individual here was born for something more profound than standing by the intersections. This, to me, was just a chapter in the story of Ubong. You understand?
Because if you had used it to define you, you'd still be in the gutter today.
Yeah, like I'd have given up long time ago. But for some strange... That is why I told you that situations, especially the harsh ones, teach you moral discipline. They teach you the most valuable lessons in life are learned the hard way. Mm. You understand? So throughout it all, through all the pain, the tears, the suffering, losing friends, people like my friends being stabbed in my face. I've helped three of my dead friends. And for the saddest thing, Joe.
That was going to be one of my questions, actually. But
my brother, that guy, Joe, I'm sorry to say this, but they turned him away. They said he's stinking. He should go wash first before they readmit him.
At a clinic? Like, no,
where was this?
No way.
Huh?
No way.
And he died.
Are you serious?
Bro.
Maybe in South Africa, that happened. Bro. You sure security didn't turn him away?
Probably security.
My brother, it's not the first time this happens. The second time is when Utabo was stabbed in the heart with the screwdriver. And we tried in vain for people to stop their cars, at least take him to the hospital. Mm. While we phoned ambulances, and ambulances took hours. And while this guy, you could see this guy is slowly losing grip of consciousness and life, and so those are some of the pains that you get to endure in life, you understand? Because that's, to me, that is why I tell you that for some odd reason I just had to witness those things, because one day I can be of assistance or the embetterment of other people's lives.
Do you have tissue? Do you have tissue there, guys, at the back? Let's get Bonga, son. Thanks for sharing this, Bonga, man. You know what this is making me to for people to realize is that people living on the street are also humans. We need to Thank you. Is that people living on the street are human beings too and go through the same emotions and difficulties mentally, physically, and probably worse.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. And probably worse.
If guys need help with substance abuse, you can just search Sanka.
Okay.
You can get your nearest place.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to buy methadone. You can get it in this. You can get it SANCA. You can get it you can get it in a proper facility and you can help you wean off, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's another story I have with this with homeless guys. It's like we have a guy called Lamborghini. Lamborghini will bring that trolley and bring whoever people are sick.
In yes, the homeless guys.
He'll bring them to the into the ED. And then he'll offload them. Yeah.
You understand?
Yeah. Happens all the time. Yeah.
So somebody that gets injured, stabbed, shot, whatever the case may be. Yeah, I remember this guy.
Yeah.
I was going to ask now, and it's maybe following up. This is one of my questions is, you look so nice and your skin is smooth. And we know men who, or people who live on the street are full of scars, full of stab wounds that have been healed.
Well, I have only one stab wound in my entire body, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and, that's actually quite significant. Eh?
Is this defending yourself? I was saving a life.
Oh.
I was saving late Clive. Clive was being attacked by six colored guys, all of them with knives. Mm. And they wanted to take money and they wanted to take his shoes. And then for some odd reason, I just came out of nowhere.
Mm.
And then I just told him, hey, bro, it's like a movie. Mm. Have you ever done something when you look back, like, how did I even accomplish that? Like, I don't know. Like, bro, I was fighting six guys, one man. That's where, and imagine with knives. I have no knives.
So how have you survived 18 years with only that one scar? That's what are you to say, what do they call
you? Are you lucky or are you Rambo? Or are you,
it's one of the two. Are you the guy in the street or what, like a house nigger or something like that?
What do you mean, like naturally, I'm not a violent person.
Okay.
I'm, hence that is why one of my videos, I'm even labeled social, what's this? Embracing the masses. Because I'm passionate about the word love. Yeah.
I'm guessing you didn't look for trouble.
No, cause trouble. That is why I told you, Guti.
Yeah.
As circumstance, but I've never really labeled myself as such. I just always believed, Hore Bonga, you are unique. You understand? You are a prototype. There is no other BONGA in the entire galaxy but you.
Not you.
And for a specific reason and a purpose.
Yeah.
You understand? I'm Christian, I get it. And in scripturally, there's a verse that says, where the Lord himself says, I have known you. I have known you before you were even conceived in your mother's womb. And it further states, I have known and ordained you. So that to me was a source of encouragement, which no matter what has happened in my life, the Lord had known me before I was even conceived. And not only did the Lord know me, he ordained me, which means my existence, my coming into the galaxy of these intergalactic cosmos was for a purpose. You understand? So remember how life is a journey. Agar, your purpose itself, your destiny itself is a journey. Remember. And I want you to look at this. All the people, all the profound people that are of inspiration to me had some sort of tribulation that they had to go through. Mm-hmm. You understand? And to what? To overcome. And to conquer.
Who are your inspirations?
I was coming to that. Nelson Rolihlahla Mandela, the first democratically elected president of SA. You understand? Went to 25 years imprisonment. Imagine, he fought for freedom, you know? But in order for him to acquire the freedom, his own freedom had to be deprived of him for 25. Imagine. So ask yourself, 25 years in prison. What was going through Nelson Mandela's mind? Don't you think that he's also human in the end? Don't you think there were times where he felt like it's done, it's over, it's like it was all in vain. My efforts were in vain because this is the result. You understand? Mm. But for some odd reason, his release, ne, they put him as the leader of the state. Mm. That speaks volumes.
Mm.
You understand? Even Christ Jesus himself, you understand that? He, as the scripture says, died for the liberation of sin for, you know, the society. You understand? And then he himself had to be crucified, spat on. You know, he suffered these gruesome, inhumane things to accomplish what he himself said was his destiny.
Mm.
Then you get Obonga, which 18 years on the streets was not a joke. You understand?
I think you need to be your own inspiration. I think your story alone is a motivation and inspiration to many.
You understand?
And you could even use it for yourself.
Yeah.
You know?
So
things
I want to judge that based on the current. That's the problem with people. People always look at life for today. What you are today. What has... Oh, you're asking $2 today. You understand?
That's what I was going to ask. You know, everyone who begs on the street or lives on the street, right? I can understand that daily, collecting daily 5 rands, 10 rands, 20 rands can sustain you day to day. You know, but my question was going to be...
What if I told you that I'm the actual current breadwinner at home? Remember, I'm staying with my mother, two sibling sisters, and their kids.
Yeah.
And remember, no one is employed in my house, as you speak.
Mm.
So whatever I get, even right now, I'm in the process of saving for their TV.
So my first question was going to be, how much can you make on the street corners?
Yeah, because...
you see, this is my card, my bank card, and my ID.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
How much is it possible to make?
We do need to wrap up, but we have a few, just if you could answer quick fire questions.
Yeah. Okay, no problem.
So that we can
And these are just things that we see, maybe have been in the news, or we have misconceptions about what happens, you know.
Okay.
And maybe if people know these things, they might understand.
Yes.
So how rapid much fire. Is it you can make let's go.
In a day, in a good day, on a Sandton corner?
Yo, Bafetu, that I believe is confidential. No comment.
Yeah. No, you know why? Because, I mean, when I was in high school, which is now 2009, when I finished, so over 10 years, 15 years, whatever, there was a street kid who was sort of a friend. And at that time, he was like, 50 rand a day is easy.
Okay.
So if that was such a long time ago and you were saying, no, you can go with 50 rand on a Friday, 80 rand. I know that confidential number that you're keeping there.
There's
a reason why you're keeping it confidential. But my question also is going to be is how in South Africa can we actually help people living on the street? So let's say I came today and I gave a street kid 50,000 rand in a bag. What is he going to do with it? Is that a way to help people who are living on the street?
Or what would you say is the solution to the homeless?
Because
problem?
If you're begging every day, it will make me think, okay, if I just give you 50,000 rand, you don't need is that a misconception?
People also say they're gonna just take the money and use it for drugs.
Fully. Okay, I gotta remember Hore, Yabana would sing Akila. There's four of us. Remember, we are diverse. You understand? So that's how the world is. You understand? People are different. Some, you understand, will do what you have just said. Some will use it for substances. And then some will actually, there's people who, I know there's a guy who's renting a cottage. He's actually doing music. And then you find those guitar players. So that is why I say it's just the different individuals with different mandates and different statutes. You understand? But what I can tell you is that it always helps to don't make it like a quick thing, a quick two. 15, bye-bye. Sit down and get to understand the character better.
Who the person is.
Yes.
Because you explained how everyone has a different story on the street of where they come from.
Because the problem is that people, they put a banana and orange and an apple in one plastic and just called it fruit. You understand, Gandhi? In actual essence, these edibles have different nutritional yeah. benefits, you know, potassium, vitamin C. There's, you understand?
So, I think that that sort of answers my next question, because I was going to ask you, in my experience again, we've once employed someone who was living on the street. We became familiar with him. You know, we grew up with him on the street. We became big. But he didn't want the work.
Didn't want it.
He instead worked for a while and went back to the street, and he said, ah, it's better there on the street.
You understand? Hence, that is why I say it's based on individual. Remember, there's something called individualism. You understand? My views, my opinions, my perceptions, my goals, my ideas, my ideologies,
Do you think that there's some people that prefer the street? They don't want to be in a job. They don't want to have to, you know, wake up every day and go to somebody and work for somebody else. Do you think that that's also true?
Some do. Some don't.
Would you say which is the majority? Do you think the majority of the people want to get out of the streets? They don't want to be
obviously there. Everyone wants to get out of it. Some feel stuck. Some have accepted. Some have become comfortable in that space. Some have.
I suppose it's almost exactly like the job, being in a job. Most people don't want to be in a job.
Yeah, like the benefits of being in a job. Some people are seriously underpaid, but there's people who spend 15 years still
in the same job.
I'm going to face that nonsense of a boss. You know, he irritates me.
Yeah.
But he's still going there, you understand? Yeah, people are scared to venture out of the comfort zone in that box and, you know, embrace entrepreneurial spirit. Yeah.
I think the last question we wanted to ask was about in terms of like romantic relationships. Because I've met people on the streets. I've met people who live on the streets who've come in, you know, boyfriend, girlfriend.
Yeah, you're so correct.
Having relationships. Like, and because you're human, as you said, you're human. You need love. You need sex.
No, that's true.
That's true. You need it.
Now, just to add on to that is that I met a guy who lived on the street. He was quite ill.
Yeah.
And diagnosed him with HIV, as being HIV positive.
Okay.
And throughout the counseling or education we were discussing.
Yeah.
He said, you know, he doesn't have a girlfriend. That when we use nyaope, we chow each other as the nyaope guys, as the guys smoking nyaope.
What?
So,
I won't lie to you. That's a first.
For you, for 18 him. Years, that's a first.
18 years of this.
I won't lie to you.
Serious.
Like, I've...
Don't tell... These were the words he used.
Sorry, but...
Whoa. So that you can see that... Deep stuff. This was what he told me. The words he used is this. Yeah, I see a kaolwana. You see...
Bro,
is that
this is out of this world, bro. I won't lie to you, bro.
Is that, so my
in my 18-year experience,
maybe
with
it's
the
just
streets,
a physical thing, then,
or maybe it's not actually. He was loafing around,
but he was. I mean, it was a serious discussion. We weren't laughing or anything. Yeah,
but remember, there's now this new trend called Bluetooth.
Bluetooth.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Where now guys are using syringes to... Remember what it now... you know, syringes have taken over?
And
now we find guys with massive wounds.
Abscesses.
And you understand?
Yeah.
They inject themselves and then they pull out
crazy.
The blood.
It's crazy. It's crazy.
Yeah.
One bag of morphine. I injected in my blood, but I don't. I need to have still.
You don't take the thing off the tourniquet.
Yeah, and then it mixes with the blood in the vascular whatever. Then I suck it out, and then I'm going to give you a quarter. Now imagine the transfusion of the blood towards one is HIV. We're all screwed. Yeah, so I believe, Jorge, maybe tapping on to his HIV status I believe it, the Bluetooth
no,
was
it's potential. That's potential, of course. But yeah. I think let's maybe answer Suhail's one. How is
just to
pool?
Close on this one?
Yeah.
How is but the romantic. Pool? How's the dating pool on the streets?
No, guys. Let's be just honest. Yeah. Boys will be boys, and boys dig a chick.
Yeah.
Hey, babe.
Yeah.
But for me personally, I haven't had a chick since 2002.
Sure.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I've never had a girlfriend since 2002. Mm. And that was still high school.
Mm.
And can I tell you a story? I loved that girl so much that when we split, I was in pieces.
Mm.
Yeah, so my heart was broken to such an extent that I feared women from that day, because I felt like, have you ever loved someone so much that you felt like they're your soulmate, they're your other half, they are your yin to the yang, like, and when that breaks, you feel like it's, I don't know, irreparable.
High school love is like that.
Yeah, especially the first one. Yeah. Your first sight to the feminine counterpart.
Yeah. Mm.
So that was it to me. And funny enough, I've never actually focused on that. Funny enough, you asked me that, you know, because I was more focused on literature more than anything.
And you're now into music as well.
Yeah, I'm doing hip hop. That's what's up.
We're gonna play one of your songs to wrap up.
Yeah. That's what's up. I'm all about inspiration.
Thank you so much, Bong. I'm sorry we've run out of time.
No problem. Yeah.
It's been a good solid hour having you here, and
I
hope that we can actually pick
more than
up
an hour here.
I think there's so much more that we could talk to you about.
And yeah.
Unfortunately, we ran out of time. But thank you so much for your time and for sharing these really inspirational stories.
Yeah.
I think the take-home message for all of us here today is, people that are living on the streets are human too.
Yeah.
They deserve love. They deserve kindness and compassion. So thank you once again, Bonga Sithole, for joining us. You want to say something to
close? Last words, isn't it? Let us embrace the power of the word L-O-V-E, love. Love is something that I can never put in words.
Mm.
Love is beautiful. Love is actually one of the fundamental foundations of our very existence. Love and life walk hand in hand. You can never separate the two.
Thank you. That's been another episode of Let's Talk Man with the Gents Clinic. My name is Dr. Suhail Essa, signing off.
Dr. Brendan Matthews.
Dr. Naseem Sharif.
Ubong, I'll be
O-N-G-A.
That's what's up.
We'll signing see you out. Next week.
Hotsa Carter, you do beats too?
I just wonder. Whoever created the hands of time as classic songs say, I look at the clock on the wall, it doesn't bother me at all, because I know it's been a long time coming. But guess what?
I live in the city, I came from the hood. Was very so angry, I never felt good. Used to be left it, I never slept good. A very depressive, unlovable dude. Argue with parents for days and weeks. Very unpleasant, I cut off the world. Greeting nobody, I always felt weak. The people that knew me, saw me as real. Got myself in my room, nigga. Started reading them books, nigga. Imagine me in the burps, nigga. Manifesting me as a wealthy nigga. 3 years a row, I closed myself in. Avoided old friends, I always stayed in. Created my visions, my dreams to win. Confidence boost, isolation, I need it. No, I'm up. Stepped out the house, I made it. I'll never stop. Eating this money, I made it. Got everything that I've always needed. For all the bad times I ever pleaded. Don't worry about nothing, don't check the price. Everything is always nice. Going through another journey though. Recently got a studio. Record these hits like it's all I know. Can get rough like the rodeo. Let me be humble with all I got. Life is called a yin yang. For all the wins will be some losses. Screw it though, it's been a long time coming. I'm walking to school, the sun blazing. Trying to be cool, faking. Fighting with parents, dream chasing.
been a long, long way coming. You already know. It's been a long way coming.
From walking to school, the sun blazing.
Yeah, yeah, it's been a long way coming, yeah.
Trying to be cool, cool, faking. Fighting with parents, street chasing.
It's been a long, long way coming. You already know. It's been a long way coming.
The sands of time. In an hourglass, I wish every granule could speak its own terms. It would tell you the vast society at large. If I could open up, pour out every grain of sand and scatter it on the table, I believe, Hore, each one has a story to tell. One defines a moment in time, a second, a minute, a day, an hour. Awaiting, dreaming, preparing, sweating, exercising a resilience as the arms of time click, click, tick and talk. So I grow more in hope, more in faith, knowing slowly but progressively the time shall come. Oh, beautiful life of mine, it's been a long time coming. Oh, beautiful world of mine, it's been a long time coming. But guess what?
You already know.
The time has come.
From walking to school, the sun blazing.
Yeah.
Trying to be cool, cool, faking. Fighting with parents, street chasing.
It's been a long, long way coming. You already know. It's been a long way coming.
From walking to school, the sun blazing.
Yeah.
Trying to be cool, cool, faking. Fighting with parents, street chasing.
It's been a long, long way coming.